Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, and good afternoon, everyone. I'm Marjorie Pabst, the host of Caregiver and Physician Conversations, sponsored by eCareDiary.com. I am a speaker, facilitator, and co-author of Enrich Your Caregiving Journey, the winner of the 2010 Caregiver Friendly Award. You can access that information at www.pivotalcrossings.com. The purpose of our show is to provide practical information and tips for both family and professional caregivers, particularly on how to have meaningful and collaborative conversations for patient healing. We seek to develop ideas that will bridge the gap between family caregivers and medical professionals as emotional, social, and spiritual needs arise. Today's show will focus on forging partnerships with your doctor and other medical professionals. As caregivers, being an invaluable partner is a key goal. You, the caregiver, need to be seen as part of the team caring for your loved one. And to really put forth the purpose and the goals and the tips for this today, and being this invaluable partner with your doctor, is Dr. Barry Jacobs. He is a clinical psychologist, family therapist, and the author of The Emotional Guide for Caregivers, Looking After Yourself and Your Family While Helping an Aging Parent. This is a book I plan and have been reading, and it's just marvelous. As a clinician, he specializes in helping families cope with serious and chronic medical illnesses. As an educator, he works as the Director of Behavioral Sciences for the Crozer Keystone Family Medicine Residency Program in Springfield, Pennsylvania. And he's had adjunct faculty positions with Temple University School of Medicine, the University of Pennsylvania School of Nursing, and the Institute for Clinical Psychology at Widener University. He is also the national spokesperson on family caregiving for the American Heart Association. You can access Dr. Jacobs' website at www.emotionalsurvivalguide.com. We'll be opening the phone lines later, so please give us a call at 347-857-3399 and press 1. I will remind you of that information later. Dr. Barry Jacobs, welcome. You bring a wealth of experience and information to our show today. I'm really eager to hear how caregivers can become true partners in the pursuit of healing. Dr. Jacobs, help us define what you mean by partner.
Marjorie, thank you so much for having me on the program. It's really a pleasure being here. So what I mean by partner is the family caregiver and the physician are both on the same team working for the same goals, and that is the goals of how to increase the longevity, improve the quality of life of the family caregiver's loved one. And partners are people who are pulling in the same direction. They have mutual respect, and they have found specific ways of cooperating with one another.
Okay, great. And I'm thinking that also probably trust is really paramount here, that once for people to work really together in the same direction, it's a trust factor, an emotional factor that keeps them on that same wavelength. Would that be fair to say?
I think that's right on the mark. I mean, unfortunately, you know, lots of folks have ambivalent feelings about physicians. There are many people who out and out distrust physicians because they've had bad experiences with them in the past, or because they are afraid that physicians have very rigidly held views and are not going to listen to them. Other people sometimes put physicians on too high a pedestal and will take every word the physician says as the gospel. And I think what is a better working relationship and a more trusting relationship is one in which the family caregiver and physician respect the specific knowledge they have of the patient and trust that the other person is going to listen to them and that they're going to that there's a general agreement that they're going to try to forge their efforts to the same goal. And when that when that's in place, when that trust is in place, it goes a long way towards creating a strong team, which is going to have good outcomes in the long run for the patient.
Yes. And, you know, I think of my own personal caregiving situation, and when I was in that situation, I was ambivalent, just like you said, and I put doctors on too high a pedestal. And one day I just woke up and I thought, you know what, I'm going to break through this. I am going to take this into my own hands and just look at this physician, not only as a physician, but as a person. And I'm just going to say, look, hey, I'm concerned, and let me share more with you about me and about my patient and about what it is that I'm concerned about. And you know what, Dr. Jacobs, there was a breakthrough.
I'm sure by doing that, first of all, you allow the physician more basis for empathizing with you and really for tailoring whatever he or she had to offer you to your particular situation. I think that what you probably also got from the physician is an acknowledgement of your relationship with the patient and your special knowledge of the patient, knowledge that was very important to the physician in order for the physician to do the very best job that he or she could do. And so by stepping out of the kind of quiet and maybe obsequious family caregiver role, you allow the physician to develop a better working relationship with you.
Yes, yes. And I'm sure you have I know you train, work with a lot of professional caregivers, including physicians. And what kinds of things do you recommend to them when they see a caregiver being somewhat ambivalent, quiet, not stepping out of their comfort zone?
I work as a faculty member in a family medicine training program outside of Philadelphia, and I have given lectures over the last 10 years to maybe thousands of physicians about working with family caregivers. And one of the first things that I am trying to do with physicians is to raise their awareness of the kind of stresses and strains that family caregivers experience. And then secondly, what I say to physicians is that if they say nothing, if they do not acknowledge the family caregiver's presence in the room, if they don't acknowledge the family caregiver's efforts, they will do harm. And that what family caregivers need from physicians is just basic acknowledgement of the essential role that they're playing. One of the main ways that physicians can provide this acknowledgement is to simply ask the family caregiver, how are you doing? And they don't need to get into great detail, but they need to say to the family caregiver, I know this is hard. I know that there are probably days that you don't want to do this, but I'm glad that you're doing it for the sake of my patient. And by the way, how are you managing with this?
Yeah.
And if the doctors I train do nothing else but that, I'm very pleased.
Yes. Well, I agree with you because that begins that conversation that you're talking about, that if they're both headed in the same direction, now both people begin to be on that same wavelength. And as you know, it's not just one conversation, it's a process, because you're going to see this doctor again and again, you and your loved one. So getting on that wavelength of we're sharing information. Do you find that caregivers or their patients sometimes don't provide enough information to the doctor, that they hold back too much? What's your experience in that area?
I think that sometimes family caregivers don't know how to provide information to physicians in a form that physicians can readily use. And so what ends up happening is if the family caregiver doesn't feel like they've had the opportunity to present their viewpoint, and then they feel marginalized and they feel frustrated. So, you know, one of the things that I work with family caregivers is to understand the culture of medicine, to understand the kind of time pressures that physicians are under, and also to understand what the best ways of communicating with physicians are. So we, you know, right now we are living in a pretty interesting time in terms of physician-patient communication. I mean, many health systems have now adopted electronic medical records. Many of those electronic medical records now have what are called patient or patient and family portals. So what many health systems this year are now rolling out is a way for family caregivers to email with secure email a physician any question that they have, any information that they have, and to expect back within 48 hours a response from that physician. So what this means is that family caregivers don't just have to find a way to get, you know, two words in edgewise during the already packed patient visit in the medical exam room in the family medicine office, that they are able both before the medical visit to send information, after the medical visit to send clarifying questions via email, and to have the physician communicate with them in a manner that kind of fosters that ongoing relationship with the family caregiver, but also furthers the end of better patient care.
Oh, that's terrific. So what I'm hearing in your voice is I'm hearing that you're feeling, even though you wrote your book a few years back, you're seeing really great progress in this area. I'm hearing you being quite optimistic about what we're going to see going forward in this new culture of medicine.
I am optimistic in that I think that physicians now understand better than they did 5 or 10 or 20 years ago that in order to provide satisfactory or exemplary care, they have to be able to communicate effectively with patients and their family members, and that we live in a time in history when communication, modes of communication are various, and you know, there are physicians who still insist that all communication occur face-to-face, or insist that everything be done via the phone. But more and more of them are also becoming more accustomed to using electronic technologies like email. One thing that's really important for family caregivers to ask a physician in this day and age is, what is the best way for me to communicate with you? How do you prefer that I communicate with you? Would you prefer that I call you or write to you with a letter or send you an email or make a separate appointment for me to come in just to express my concerns or ask my questions of you? And most physicians will have a preferred mode of communication, and that if family caregivers use that mode of communication, they're much more likely to develop that effective working partnership with that physician.
Oh, that is great. I mean, what a great tip. I hope all of you listening today are going to find a pen or a pencil if you don't already have one. If there's one thing you take away from today's show, it's that question. Dr. Jacobs has just pointed out that this is an invaluable question for you, a way to become that invaluable partner, to ask that question, what is the best way to communicate with you, to ask your doctor or medical professional that. That's terrific. Thank you so much. You know, one of the things that also comes to my mind is the issue of HIPAA and the privacy. And so when we're talking about caregivers and their loved ones, their patients, moving on this track with a physician, I think of some of those privacy issues and sometimes the reluctance of a patient to sometimes not share all the information with his or her loved one. What are your thoughts about that, Dr. Jacobs?
Well, as you know, HIPAA is a federal law that came into being maybe 10, 12 years ago, specifically to help ensure that that patients' medical information would be held strictly confidential by healthcare professionals. So I think the intent of HIPAA is a very good one. I mean, we all worry about where our personal information goes nowadays, and including our medical information. Where HIPAA has become a problem for family caregivers, as you know, is that oftentimes physicians in particular are reluctant to share medical information about a patient with that patient's loved ones, unless they have explicit written permission from the patient to share that information. Mm-hmm. And I, unfortunately, over the years, I've seen seen physicians use HIPAA as a way of literally avoiding having communication with family members, and as if somehow communicating with family members would negatively affect the physician's relationship with the patient. So I think it's very important for family caregivers to talk with their loved ones who are patients, and say to them, you know, in order for me to be the very best advocate for you, and in order for me to have a good working partnership with your physician, I need you to sign a authorization for release of medical information form in that physician's office, stating that the physician can and should communicate with me about what's going on with my medical care. And I would say by and large patients are agreeable with this. Occasionally, patients will say, I don't want my physician to share information with you, and then that becomes a point for further conversation between the family caregiver and the person that they're caring for. But I think, you know, HIPAA does not need to be an obstacle between family caregivers and physicians if the family caregiver has primed the patient to sign the correct forms.
Yeah. Okay, great. That's great information as well. Thank you. That's really probably the best user-friendly information I've heard on the topic as to what physicians and particular family caregivers can do to keep those lines of communication open. So thank you so much. So let's move on to, okay, what if that family caregiver has done that and the loved one has shared, asked the doctor to share information with the caregiver, and now the caregiver is in front of the doctor and saying, ask a question, and what if the explanation that your loved one and you as caregiver are getting isn't quite in the understandable language that you would like it to be? Dr. Jacobs, can you give us a response that works very well with doctors to kind of be tactful, but also remind them that, well, you know, can you put that in more user-friendly language for me?
I think what you just said would be a perfectly good response. I guess my way of saying would be, I would say, Dr. Smith, could you put that in layman's English for me, so mm-hmm. I can grasp what you're saying. Physicians today, who particularly younger physicians who've gone through medical school in the last 10 years. Have received a lot of information about, a lot of training in communicating effectively with patients, and they know that they shouldn't be talking over people's heads. And so I think if you cue the physician that they are using overly technical language, they will make the adjustment very readily, because they know that they need to speak in layman's English.
Great. Yeah, for those caregivers out there today, Dr. Jacobs is absolutely right, at least from my own experience. If I say something like, I'm concerned about whatever it is, or I don't understand whatever it is, or I'm concerned about safety issues with respect to what I'm doing as a caregiver in the home with my loved one, I have never not gotten a positive response from a physician or a medical professional. I think those words are real triggers to get people to respond and to then readjust what they're telling you.
Sure. So I, as you know, Marjorie, I've been taking care of my 81-year-old mother, who has kind of multiple medical problems nowadays, and I've moved her up from Florida. She's living about a mile from me in an apartment, and I have hooked her up with physicians in my health system, some of whom I work with in other contexts. So what happens to me is if I'm talking with physicians who I know about my mother, and because I'm another healthcare professional, though not a physician, they're very want to begin talking in technical language with me, and if I don't understand it, I have to say to them, you know, run that by me again, you know, and then just that one phrase, run that by me again, is enough to get them to slow it down and to put it in different language.
Yes, very good. Yeah, thanks so much for that example. I know you work with a lot of professional caregivers, and now that you've mentioned your mother, do you find that professional caregivers, whether they be doctors or nurses or whomever, do you see, this kind of a leading question, but I'm assuming that you see changes in their response to people who are caregivers, that almost having that personal family experience moves them to a new realm of consciousness, if you will, about caregiving. Do you see that happening?
Absolutely. When I give talks to physicians about family caregivers, I always start the workshop by asking how many people in the room have been family caregivers themselves at one point or another, and almost every hand goes up. This is a group that is self-selected. They have had an experience as family caregivers, which has sensitized them to the plight of family caregivers, and they then show up in my workshop to learn more about how to work effectively with family caregivers. People, who have not had the experience have a much harder time getting it. One of the challenges for me in teaching residents, most of whom are in their mid to late 20s, most of whom have not had a lot of life experience, including family caregiving experience, is to make this real for them. And we do that literally by bringing family caregivers from the community in to talk with them. We go on home visits to patients' homes where we have direct contact with the family caregivers. But the more experience they have in their own lives, certainly the more empathy they have for family caregivers in their clinical practices.
Yes, exactly. Well, this has been fascinating and full of tips, and I'd like to open the phone lines now to see if we have any callers. Our number again is 347-857-3399, and when you call in, you'll be prompted to press 1, and that will give you the access to us. So do we have any callers on the line at this point? Hello? Any callers on the line? Well, what we will do when we don't have callers, and I hope those of you who haven't called are calling in right at this very moment, we'll take your questions in just a moment. But I do have another question here for Dr. Jacobs that we have seen on our social media and eCare Diaries, feedback to eCare Diary. That question is, and this is one I hear a lot too, Dr. Jacobs, what if a family has more than one caregiver? What are your suggestions for forging that invaluable partnership? And it obviously becomes more complicated if there are more caregivers in a family.
Let me just make sure I understand the question, that there's more than one person providing care for a given loved one, or more than one loved one who needs care?
Thank you for clarifying that. No, there's more than one caregiver. So you say have a mother, and you have several siblings, all of whom are taking care of, and maybe they take their mother, round robin, and one will take her to an appointment on one day and then another on the next week. And so
right.
What are some tips?
So I can tell you what we talk about in the training of physicians. So I can tell you what physicians are expecting, and that is what they want is for the family to identify one spokesperson for the family. And that be the prime contact for the physician. And this is true in the outpatient office, and it's especially true in a hospital setting, where a loved one may be in the ICU or having another part of the hospital where they're getting very intensive treatment, and family members are coming in and out of the room, and it's very confusing for healthcare professionals to figure out who in the family plays what role. And also, it's also very difficult for the healthcare team to know how to disseminate important information to the family. And so I think it works better in terms of that family healthcare partnership if there is one spokesperson for the family who's going to ask most of the questions and disseminate most of the information that they learn from the healthcare team to the rest of the family. There are some families that are fine with this; others are less fine with it because they different family members have different points of view, and they want to have their own time with the doctor and their own say so. But ideally, it works best if the prime caregiver is the one who's interacting with the family. It also so happens that many families have one or other family members who themselves are healthcare professionals. So if you're a family that has a nurse, then that nurse winds up becoming deputized as the spokesperson, and that nurse will then go and talk with the physicians because they have the most background knowledge and will be treated maybe a little bit differently than a non-professional who is in that family role.
Oh, that's very good information. And, you know, this is very interesting. One spokesperson for the family. I hope everybody out there is taking that in. I never quite realized that when I was a caregiver, that really that's the most helpful thing for a doctor, although it makes great sense. So, you know, what we're doing, what eCare Diary is doing on Thursday is they are going to be hosting me doing a whole thing about family dynamics and how to have an effective family meeting. And so it occurs to me here that one of the key decisions of a family meeting needs to be who is going to be the spokesperson for us when we are in the hospital or even in a clinical situation. So thank you very much for that. Anybody else on the line? I have another question then. That has come in over social media as well. Do caregivers and families have the power, this is a very loaded question as well, do caregivers and families have the power to change the culture of medicine?
I think, that's a very hard question to answer. I think that medicine today is in a position where patient and family satisfaction matters more than ever.
Mm-hmm.
And when patients are satisfied with physician care and the clinical outcomes, you know, patients do better, that they spend less days in the hospital and they, you know, their diabetes is under better control, et cetera, then in today and in the future, physicians are going to get paid more. So physicians need to develop good working relationships with patients and their family members, and to that degree, patients and family members have leverage to tell a physician when they agree or disagree with him or her, to say that they don't like the way the office is running, to say that they need alternative treatments because mm-hmm. the current treatment plan is too onerous.
Yes. Okay. That's great. That's good to know. And I quite frankly think that's a healthy situation as long as all of us as family caregivers are tactful and respectful and, you know, of the doctors and medical professionals' concerns. So thank you so much, Dr. Jacobs. This has been just terrific. I know I've learned a lot, and I so appreciate your being on the show. Next month, I'd like to give all of you out there a preview of what we're going to be doing on Caregiver and Physician Conversations. I'll be interviewing Dr. Mark Lax, who is the author of Treat Me, Not My Age. That will be on Tuesday, August 25th at 2 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time. We're going to be talking about how to manage the emergency room, and that should be a very intriguing and interesting discussion for those of us who have had experience in emergency rooms. Next week on Tuesday, October 2nd, as part of eCare Diary's show Empowering Family Caregivers, Susan Bida will be interviewing Dr. Michael Weiner, and they're going to be discussing the Alzheimer's disease neuroimaging initiative that tracks the progression of Alzheimer's. The acronym for that is ADNI. That should be a very interesting show on tracking the progression of Alzheimer's with Dr. Michael Weiner. Again, thank you all for tuning in. Thank you again, Dr. Barry Jacobs. And again, Dr. Jacobs' book is The Emotional Guide for Caregivers, Looking After Yourself and Your Family While Helping an Aging Parent. Thank you again, Dr. Jacobs.
My pleasure. Thank you.
Thanks. Thanks to everyone out there, and good afternoon.